This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the No Name Never podcast. I'm your host, Natalie Bromley, and this week it's a very special East Lancs Derby Victory edition. Clarets, are we ever going to get over Sunday? Have you stopped smiling yet? Have you stopped running around singing "You Are" beep, beep, beep to people in blue and white? Have you stopped singing the sorority earworm? Have you just, how are you feeling, Clarets? Get on board. Before we start this week's podcast, we want, just keep it coming. You know, the euphoria on Twitter's dried up a bit over the last couple of days as we've all calmed down. Let's not make it stop. Keep it coming. Let us know how you are feeling a few days on after that victory. I am joined this week by two members of our analysis team. We have got Tom Whittaker and George Poole, and we are going to dive straight in. Turf Moor, Sunday the 11th of November 2022 shall forever be known as the day that the Clarets finally showed that lot up down the road for what they are. Miles, miles, miles behind us. Tom Whittaker, let's start with you. Kick us off. How are you feeling?
Thanks for mentioning the Zorori earworm, because I think I just got it out of my head about 5 minutes before
Sorry.
We start.
Well, if it's in mine, it's in yours as well. That's how this team works.
Brilliant. What an amazing day. Like you say, I think it's not just that we beat him. Obviously, we beat him a few times in a row now, but it's the fact that we absolutely battered him. Like, they were so bad. We were fantastic. It was like, you know, you Scrappy-Doo, you know, swinging
yes.
his fist. Didn't get near us, didn't lay a glove on us. You know, all the big talk before the match, oh, we'll be swinging balls in the box. Muric won't be able to cope. I mean, Muric, I'm surprised that
fire
didn't wake him up. Man, he didn't have anything to do. Amazing. So, yeah, fantastic. Just a brilliant day. Just so much fun to absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. George, it's interesting what you were saying there about the Scrappy-Doo thing, because for me, whilst a lot of the national media are reporting that the first half was a relatively tight affair, I'm not sure it was that tight, to be honest. I was feeling pretty comfortable at half time. I think the writing was on the wall for me at half time, seeing their players practically crawl off the pitch at half time. We had run them ragged for 45 minutes. They'd not had, it was something like 79% possession or something in the first half. And they looked like they didn't want to come out for the second half. So it was, I think at that point, we kind of knew it was just a matter of time.
Yeah, you could tell at half time, exactly like you said, it was going to be the first thing I brought up as well, in that it's sort of the story of our season in a lot of ways. And Company mentioned it after the game, in that most of our goals are scored like between the 50th and the 70th minute, I believe. It's something like that. Yeah. And it's because we just tire teams out. We pass the ball so well, but obviously teams set up to try and just defend against us. And that was one of the things that I found most peculiar about the weekend. I watched that James Olcott's like preview video for the game, and he was talking about how Blackburn liked to press under Thomason. He thought they'd, you know, really come at us and just try and, you know, really bring that intensity of a derby. But they didn't. They just sat off us, let us play our football in the first half, almost like they wanted to just be a counter-attacking team. But in doing so, they were chasing the ball for 45 minutes. And it turned out at half-time, you could tell there was something in the air. When they were walking down the tunnel, they looked absolutely cream-crackered. Meanwhile, the Burnley players were a couple. I think it might have been Sarori, the man in a moment, who was running down the tunnel and you know, and he was pumping the crowd up as he was going off at half time. Like you could tell we were on top of them. So it was no surprise that in the second half we went and did what we did. So yeah, the writing was on the wall, like you say.
Yeah, definitely. And that's interesting you said. I'm going to stick with you for a little while, George. I'm going to stop you from opening that file that Tom Whittaker's just put in chat, because that's what I was laughing at when you were on mute. You talk about strategy and you talk about, you know, that first half, sticking 11 men behind the ball and just giving us that freedom. For me, that showed a real... I don't even know if it's naivety or just downright negligence from their manager, who literally just 7 days ago had been given a free 45-minute masterclass on what our weaknesses were. And literally, not at no point in that game did they ever try and exploit that. And you can understand why their fans must be utterly, utterly furious.
Yeah, it was really weird. Like, and it wasn't just the way they set up, like not pressing and just sitting back. It was the whole, it was the body language. It was everything. They just didn't seem to understand. And I'm including Thomason very much in this. Mm. None of them seemed to understand what this game was about. I was listening to, because we went home after the game and watched all 3 hours of Sky's coverage back.
Straight away.
And watching Thomason's interviews before the game and then after the game, it was so lackadaisical. After the game, he was talking more about, you know, what's to come. He didn't show like an ounce of regret or, oh, I'm really sorry to the fans. Like this, you know, this is, I don't know how big this game is. There was none of it. It was almost like, oh, it's just another game. You know, we'll respond to this. There was no urgency. There was no passion. And you could tell they didn't understand what this game was, neither the players nor the manager. And that came to fruition on the pitch, in that there was no urgency. Like you mentioned there, in the way they set up, Sheffield United showed everyone how to go at us.
Yeah.
Now, not every team's got the quality of Sheffield United to relentlessly attack us like that. But simple thing like Ben Brereton-Diaz, fair enough, he plays off the left, but he's absolutely massive. Vitinho doesn't fancy a scrap at right back. Just launch the ball up to him a few times, but they didn't do it at all. I remember when we used to put Barnes on the left wing for, you know, a month's period in 2015, I think, and he did it against City.
Don't remind me of that.
And we used to nail it to that left wing, and he'd run off the left wing and head it back into the middle. But there was none of that from Blackburn, and it was naive, it was stupid, and it was fantastic to watch.
Yeah, it was. It was thoroughly enjoyable. Tom, that's a really good point, actually. And I think if you look at the complaints and the disappointment coming out of their set of fans, the common theme amongst them all is that their manager just did not get it. Their players never looked up for it. There was no... In the build-up, he didn't hype it. In the contrast to that, though, VK absolutely got it. And I felt that the build-up to the game, the narrative that he decided to put out there about how important it was, he managed to strike this really genius balance of stressing the importance on the players, what it means to the fans, but keeping a lid on tempers and professionalism, and also letting the fans know that they had our backs. And I think that was the difference between the managers.
Yeah, I really like what he said before the game about in a derby, the crowd and the players have got to feed off each other. Because it's a debate you hear quite a lot, you know, is it the crowd or the players going or vice versa? And he, I think he was right, you know, and it is like that in a derby. And we saw it, you know, Blackburn fans were quite loud for the first 20 minutes. You didn't hear a word out of them in the second half. And that's because they were getting absolutely nothing from their team on the pitch. Whereas in contrast, you know, the turf was rocking. As you say, it wasn't just that we're a much better team, and we obviously are a much better footballing team. I mean, watching them try and play out from the back, it was like watching a dog try to do long division. It was just like, what? why on earth are you telling them to do that? Because clearly you don't have players that are capable of doing it, and we've just shrunk an impact, picking them off. But as you say, not only was it the fact that we're miles better than them at football, which obviously always helps in a football match, we won as well. We mentioned before when me and George were talking in our preview, and I mentioned Andy Wharton, who's a really sort of well thought of young player.
Yeah.
He's got, they're both Blackburn fans, come up through the academy. Scott didn't get on. I'm told he's their best ball playing centre back as well. So if you are going to try and play out from the back, you think you'd have picked him. And Andy,
why on earth didn't they?
Just so strange. Like I think it comes back to what you said about just not understanding the derby. And maybe he's doing a, you know, trying to be too clever and overthink it a bit. Whatever it was bizarre, but it was. I'm glad he did it because you know, it turned what could have been quite a close second v third encounter into a game that looked like, you know, it looked like we were playing a. Well, I'll tell you what, we played Crawley earlier in the week. Crawley, and I'm not. This isn't some, you know, banter or whatever. This Crawley gave us a better game than Blackburn.
Yeah, they
Crawley's
did.
Better. It causes more problems. They look more up for it. Yeah, it was like a reserve game for Blackburn, and yeah, we absolutely dominated.
Yeah, it really was. That's such a good point. And it is really difficult to put out this content because you have to be aware that we have an obvious and a subconscious bias towards that. A lot of course we do. They're our fiercest rivals. So I completely get that there might be eyebrows raised with things that we say, but genuinely, they are up there with one of the worst sides that I've seen play. How they're in third place, I do not know. I put them very similar to Swansea, just really toothless. Like Swansea came, wasn't they? At least they had a game plan, but they didn't really have any substance. They had no fight in them. And they were just getting, they were chasing shadows, and I guess at least them lot down the road were a bit more disciplined in that Swansea were just dragging us down and trying to catch all the shirts because they were frustrated. But it was still that level of toothlessness about them that I just, it was embarrassing. And I think,
I think for a derby as well, if you're a Blackburn fan, probably what you want to do if you're getting battered on the pitch is at least have a bit of, you know, at least foul. Yeah. And I mean, I think that's really frustrating when you watch it. Like when we used to just like Man City used to pass around us 5-0 and we didn't even at least kick him. Do you know what I mean? You know, there's a Lee Williamson is like a Blackburn legend because he fouled Danny Ings in one of the derbies and got him a draw. So, you know, I thought that as well. You know, I thought at least Swansea, you know,
Kevin Ball is still a Burnley hero for sending David Dunn into space. So,
yeah,
you know, it's.
Exactly. So, you know, they could have at least shown a little bit of fight in that sense. Obviously, I'm not condoning kicking people off the park, but I was surprised they weren't
safely kicking, fouling them. Yeah, if you can do it safely and it's just a professional foul, take one for the team. It's like just at least give those fans just that bit of a yes, come on, get it. You want to see that they're getting stuck in them, and they didn't. They had no fight. Oh, it was so glorious to watch. It was wonderful. And I think the biggest thing for me, George, and you probably get this as well from a fan perspective, is the scale of the superiority over them was very much reinforced when you look on social media and you looked at their hashtags and you look at what their fans were posting online. Save for the odd one, the vast majority of their fans were on there saying, wow, that was horrible. That was painful. No fight. We were miles behind them. I can't believe how much better they were than us, et cetera, et cetera. I know how difficult that would be for me to admit that on a public forum, even if it was true. So that to me was a very telling sign, just how big the golfing class was.
It was monstrous, weren't it? There was no grey area on Sunday. Everyone knew what had just happened. There was no, oh, well, you know, you got a bit lucky. You know, that second goal fell to him. If it could have gone anywhere, you know, we could have got back in the game. Or we should have scored that chance. You know, when we beat them 2-1 and we mentioned me and Tom last week that it should have been 2-0 Rovers after 20 minutes and Jordan Rhodes hit the post.
Hit the post. That was a defining moment. Yeah.
Yeah, completely. And there's absolutely none of that. They had literally one shot all game. And the thing is, I remember when that shot happened, because it was Brereton Diaz cutting in off the left and striking with his right, I was thinking, golly gosh, we better not let that happen again.
That was it. Yeah. That was the moment. We're like, yes, that's what you need to do.
Yeah, I was like, that's the game plan. And I was like, we looked a bit shaky there. I'm concerned. Never happened again. There was absolutely no grey area for Rovers fans to even provide any excuses. So from my friends who are Blackburn fans, there was just pure silence. They didn't mention anything. It was like the game had never happened, conveniently enough. But yeah, it was men versus boys. And it was reminiscent of when we went there in the League Cup in 2017. And at that point, we were a Premier League side going for seventh and they were League One side. And you could put both them games on a screen next to each other. And the difference between both teams was basically the same in either encounter. So yeah, it was men versus boys. And obviously, we're going to talk about it in a bit. But it was my feeling, it's where it was the midfield where that
yeah, that's where that I'm that's apparent. Definitely where I'm heading next. I want to go somewhere else before I head to the midfield, but we'll come on to that in a minute. Yeah, similarly, my oldest friend from school, who we did the BBC Radio Lancashire Friday night show, she was bleating a lot of crap about how they were superior and how they're bigger, better club than us, which I laughed at on air. And she actually, to be fair, she didn't contact me, but I did message her this morning. But I was nice. I just basically said, you know, how are you feeling a few days later now the dust has settled? Been there many times. It absolutely sucks. And she just like literally replied like, ugh. Like, what? I was like, I'm going to leave you alone. Not going to do this. But yeah, it's, it's so lovely. Tom, before we do move on to the midfield wonder that George mentioned a minute ago, I want to start where I think we all need to start, and that is Sir Ashley of Barnes. We knew it was a blow. Well, we thought it was going to be a blow, as it turned out, when Jay didn't make it. There was a bit of a ripple pre-game that, and I think for him being a Burnley lad as well, he would have loved to have played in that fixture, but he was gutted on that bench. Once Jay didn't make it, absolutely for me, without hesitation, even with his poor form and a few doubts about him, Barnes was the right choice over Nathan Teller to start that game. Do you agree, or were you pleasantly surprised and thought the opposite?
Yeah, I think I'd have rather have had Rodriguez starting for sure, but we saw at Sheffield United last week, Teller, he's not a centre-forward. You know, I think we need a bit more presence up there if we're missing Rodriguez. Barnes, he's had some really poor games in the league. I've certainly been very critical of him on this podcast. And lest we forget, it was his first league goal for 18 months, I think. But he played well against Crawley. He looked like he was getting back into, you know, more up to speed with the way we're playing. And I think what really stood out against Blackburn, obviously he took his goals really well, especially the header. But I mentioned before about Blackburn not having any fight. And he really was, he did seem to be the player on the pitch that really got the derby feeling more than anybody else. You know, it was just little snidey little things like, as we've come to know and love from him, like, you know, going for a 50-50 with the keeper and just giving him a bit of a shove. Obviously, when he scored
into the net,
he made sure the keeper was going in the net as well, and stuff like that. You love to see that, and that's exactly what Blackburn players didn't have. You know, there was none of that needle, there was none of that aggression, I'm not saying aggression in a Kevin Ball way, just aggression in a, you know, you're on our turf. It's not going to be a comfortable afternoon for you. He just really seemed to get that. He was sort of channeling the fans onto the pitch, I felt, in the way he played. And obviously, he combined that with some ability and a couple of goals. And yeah, it was brilliant to see. And I was really pleased for him because he's been at the club a long time. And it's, you know, and again, you know, oh man, I've been critical of him. And I don't think it's been unjustified. But for a guy who's been here as long as he has, you know, it would be sad to think of him going out on a low. So, yeah, you know, whatever else happens now for the rest of his Burnley career, I think he's really cemented his place there as a Burnley fan with that performance.
Yeah, I think that's fine. And I think throughout the whole game, George, he looked a little bit less chaotic than he has been recently. He reminded me of the season that we finished in Europe when we were saying that his technical ability had finally caught up with his physical ability and his you know, his needle, essentially. And it just for one game, he reminded me of that season. It reminded me very much of his performance at West Ham away that season. And just that it wasn't all elbows. Yeah, he was, you know, he was physical, but he was strong. He wasn't clumsy. He wasn't aggressive. Yeah, he shoved the keeper into there, but that was funny. But it was just I thought it was a very professional performance from him. And to be fair, the goals that didn't go in, his strikes were equally as important, as stunning. Sorry, not important, stunning.
Yeah, it was fantastic, weren't it? And like Tom says, I, you know, for him, no matter what happens now, whether he leaves at the end of this season, whether that's him finished, you know, at the end of this season, if we go up, maybe company thinks, right, it's time to, you know, maybe go to another striker to move him on, because I think his contract might be up. Whatever happens now, this game will be long remembered, and he'll leave his head held very high indeed. And for someone that I've barely criticised him, like, I love the guy, like, a massive fan. Just to watch on Sunday was so amazing, because all of us, no one's really ever doubted, like, the effort that he puts in.
No.
But I've just felt some of the criticism has been so vindictive and personal, and a lot of it's on social media where people can just say what they want. And it's been so, it's just been out of bad taste for me. So to see, you know, Sunday happen and for him to have like one big moment in the limelight was just fantastic. And the way he went about it, it wasn't just that he scored two goals. It was the whole game. I think it was at half time that me and Rich were messaging each other, and Rich, you know, as we know, has been like critical of Barnes, but he was like, even Rich agreed with me that he'd been really good in the first half. And it was 0-0 obviously at that point, but it was his pressing from the front that made that the defenders were struggling with. It was him getting involved in the game, and you could just sort of tell the writing was on the wall. And one thing I will mention, which is interesting that I hadn't considered, obviously there's been poor form from Barnes this season, but someone mentioned on social media that he's having to play up front on his own, which he hasn't particularly done before. He's much better in a two up front.
Yeah, that's
and
true,
in the actually. second half, obviously we scored the opener, but then Teller came on and we scored the other two goals. When Teller came on, we basically changed to a 4-4-2.
Yeah.
Teller was playing as a striker alongside Barnes, which has been the case in recent weeks. And it might just be the case that Barnes has got up to speed with company's system. He's flourished when Teller's come on and they played two up front. It's not necessarily the fact that he's over the hill. Maybe he's just adapted to the system and I think you could tell that he'd taken a lot of confidence from the Crawley game and just getting his shooting boots back on. So yeah, it was just absolutely fantastic to see, and I couldn't have wished it for anybody else.
Yeah, I think you want to be looking at reviewing your social media followers, by the way, George, because I'm not entirely sure that I've seen that much abuse at him that's been personal and vindictive. I think there have been legitimate questions about his technical ability. And I think those are sound. He is one of the older players in the squad. And I think he's never been the most technically gifted player we've got, but he's had other skills that he brings, which for a decade suited us really, really well. I think for me, he's still not first choice. I don't want him to be starting. I don't think that's appropriate. But I think Tom, what the realisation was for me on Sunday was that perhaps as Burnley fans, we'd just got ourselves a little bit arrogant when it came to Ashley Barnes. And a few of us had suddenly decided that we've got this fancy new manager and Zorori and Benson and all of these Brazilian and Belgian tricky wingers, and we play this beautiful free-flowing football now, and Ashley Barnes is just a dinosaur and is from an age and we're too good for him now. Whereas actually in the Championship, every now and again, you just need that brute force of a physical target man who can put it about. And Sunday was that game.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, in the games that he's played prior, I don't think he has shown a lot of kind of ability as a target man. You know, I was at Sunderland away and the ball was just bouncing off him like, you know, he didn't
out the game.
Challenges. Don't know if it's fitness, form, what. But like I say, he's not... It's not that he's had a bad few games under Kompany and that was his first good one. He's had the last couple of seasons, he's not been the player he was. I think it's obvious that he is on the decline. But certainly part of it, I think you can probably say that he fits into Kompany's style a lot less than he did Dyche's. And perhaps this was the fixture where, we needed a little bit more Dyche-ing than we have in previous games. I think probably also fair to say that that kind of physical presence and the sort of dark arts of the game we've lacked in some of the fixtures earlier in the season. Now we've got Benson Zorori firing, we don't seem to be having as many problems. But if you think of games like Hull, Blackpool, Stoke, you know, these games where we drop points at home, where we've just struggled to break teams down, or, you know, we've sort of let the flow of the game go against us. These are probably games where someone with the sort of skill set of Barnes at his peak, and I'm not saying that he was at his peak for those games, and maybe that's why he missed them, but an Ashley Barnes playing like he did on Sunday might have made a difference in those games as well. So, yeah, I think, I said after the Sunderland game, we don't see him again, but he's proved me, you know, I'm happy to read my words there, he's proved me wrong, and I think he's proved that he has got a place in the squad for the rest of the season.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's fair.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Sticking with you then, Tom, let's move away to our wonder kid, our Moroccan wonder kid, who is on his way to the World Cup, which is very exciting today, albeit slightly nerve-wracking. Can we just pretend that that shove into the advertising hoardings was the start of Anna Sarori going, I am going to put this ball in the back of the net and I'm going to make you look really, really silly. They broke the hoarding. It went all cloudy and fuzzy after he'd done it. That was some moment, yeah?
Yeah, it's pretty dangerous, that, by the way, is it not? I thought he was quite lucky to get away without a red for that.
I think so too.
You think about that lad playing for Bath who banged his head off the wall and he's in intensive care now. And like, if you're going around shoving people into... there's not a lot made of it at the time, and obviously he didn't get badly hurt, but he could have easily been badly hurt on another day. So I've heard Blackburn fans bleating about actually going pushing the keeper, and it could have been a lot worse. So yeah, leaving that side though, yeah, you're right. I don't know if he's that kind of character where it's like you need something like that to get fired up. He seemed like a very laid back guy.
Yeah.
And I think for that one, it was just a case of, again, mentioned it, basically what it came down to is he's a lot better at football than anyone who plays for Blackburn Rovers. And in the end, the quality told. I thought his finish for the second goal was really, really good. That was a lot harder than it looks. And the amount of times I've seen a ball spin back like that.
Yes, Brownhill, we're looking at you.
Not to single anybody out, but I wouldn't have fancied Brownhill to just took that to the bottom corner. And the cross for Barnes' first goal.
That was just a beautiful goal. And the little, was it the first or the second? The little teller flick over the back that just went, that was, I can't say what it was because it's a family-friendly show, but my goodness, that was something else. We played some sublimely entertaining football on Sunday.
Yeah, the second goal was the one where he hooked it back over his head for Barnes to volley.
Is that the one where it came off his back? Was the back the third one? Yeah, it was.
So casual, just a little spin off his back. And then Brownhill just casually flicks it around, just like Brownhill off, so I'll give him some credit as well. cuts it back. Yeah, it was as the champ that says, we're taking the Michael.
Yeah, the Michael. I better warn producer Matt that we might need a few of his bleeper ones this episode. It's very hard, listeners, not to say the words. Just the name of the team for a start is a big swear word. I've been having to say them lot all episode, and I do enjoy a good swear. So this is challenging. Yeah, it was. It was just so, and it's always nice when you're not just beating your rivals and you're playing so well, to be taking the Michael as well, and to do it in such, to humiliate them well is particularly pleasing.
And I love the generational, the generational blending of the team at the moment. It's sort of very apparent when Burnley tweeted, say the new iPhone wallpapers that they made up for people to save and put as their backdrop on their phone. Yeah. And there's one where Brownhill hugging Barnes of 2014, when obviously Barnes did the assist for Danny Ings at Ewood in 2014. And then the other one was Barnes and Zorori from obviously the weekend. And we've just got that lovely balance in the squad of players who have been troopers for us for the last 10, last decade. I'm thinking of Ashley Barnes and Jack Cork in particular. And then you've got these new wonder kids in Zorori. You've got this new generation coming through, and they're both blending together so nicely. I mean, we could wax lyrical about those goals all night. That cross from Zorori was unbelievable. Watching it, and it was funny because I actually thought until that moment, until him being pushed into the advertising boards, he'd been quiet. He'd been stopped really well by the lad who they put at right back, who's usually a midfielder, I believe. But they'd put him at right back specifically to counter it. And I thought they were doing a cracking job. Zorori had basically beaten no one all day. And it just seemed to, it just snapped something in his head when he got pushed into the thing. It was like, right, now I'll show you. And as he received the ball, the chap a couple of seats down from me said, he's not done it. He's not got past him all night. All day. I wonder if this will be finally the time. And then he gets past him and to put a crossing like that with his left foot. And then obviously you were talking about the Teller flicks and back passes for the second and third goals. They were just incredible. And I think there was so much quality to like in that third goal. You had that Teller little cheeky back pass, and then you had Brownhill just flicking it over the man, putting it in the box. But then not to forget, Barnes is rolling it. He could have quite easily tried to hit that first time. He let it roll across him in anticipation of the defender jumping out to it. It was really, really good quality. And to see Ashley Barnes score any goal is amazing, but to see him score against the is amazing as well. Sorry, TalkSport.
There we are. Hang on a second.
Timestamp that.
30 minutes. I need to tell Matt that we've got a bleeper. Honestly, George.
I was only doing that because of the brilliant interview that he gave to BBC.
That's where I was going next. I was like, to the point where, is that a mock-up or did that actually happen?
No, that happened, yeah.
So nobody's dubbed over it?
That happened.
It seemed to me like somebody had dubbed that and it was just one of those legendary, like, viral things that went on social media but didn't actually happen. Right, where are we going next? Tom, where are we going next? Midfield. Jack Cork, Josh Brownhill, Josh Cullen. Thou shalt not pass anywhere through central midfield. And if we do, we're just going to take it back off you. Split second. Best performance from our central midfield of the season?
Yeah, again, it was just wanted it more tigerish all over the pitch. You could tell Brownhill is another player who really gets it in terms of, like, you know, being up for a derby. I think he really interacts really well with the fans. He was excellent. It's amazing having a good midfield because I think that's what relegated us last year. Has probably had one of the weakest midfields in the division, and yet we've seen
with the same players.
Obviously, it helps being in a division lower, but I think they're using Brownhill better than Dyche did.
Yeah, they are.
He's a really good player. I feel like one of his best games on Sunday. And he's coming into a bit more form again. Yeah, it was brilliant. Again, just all over the pitch. We ran all over him. But they're trying to play through the thirds. And it's like, why don't you just go over? Because you're not getting around any of them. You're not winning anything all day. I know they had to take the big lump off and put a kid on who didn't get in the game. But like, when he was playing first off, there was a moment where he won a header on there and flicked it on, and Brereton, you know, he didn't go anywhere with it, but he was winning headers, and you'd think Brereton Diaz could win headers as well. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I'm not complaining there because it was great.
Yeah, but literally, it's very hard just to pinpoint anything from this game. It's just like, it was just great. It was so great. So we've done defence, midfield, attack. We've sorted them out. Anything else?
On the midfield, I think we should point out Josh Cullen in particular.
Yeah,
he's a superb player. Like Tom mentioned then, they were trying to play out from the back, which, okay, I do get it. Fair enough. Like, Thomason's clearly tried this all season. Sometimes it's worked for them. It's clearly a blueprint he's trying to implement on that squad. You know, it didn't, not to compare the two sides, but it didn't work for Guardiola in the first season at City. He got laughed at. Why are you doing this? Blah, blah, blah. But by the second season, with a couple of different players, that emphasis was on the squad. So you could tell why he's trying to do it. But the point at which it fell down was what getting it from the defence to midfield, because the midfield was in another world. It was men versus boys in there. They couldn't cope with Cork and Cullen winning the ball back at every opportunity.
Yeah.
And then when we won the ball back, those triangles for Cork, Cullen, Brownhill, and then not to forget our two centre-halves as well, because they start so many attacks and they ran through the Blackburn midfield just at will at the weekend. Just so good to watch. But Josh Cullen is an incredible player. And today he's just been announced as Ireland's player of the year, which is nice thing to mention.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, and he gave an interview, which was quite good, to the Irish Times, where I've seen a couple of quotes from it where he said, you know, this time I'm really enjoying my football here, and I'm learning many things. And I feel like if we do get promoted, I can go to the Premier League and cut it there. And I just think there's absolutely no doubt about it. He is the future of that midfield if we can keep hold of him.
It is an interesting point that you did raise there, George, and Thomas, is something that I am worried about. It's very Burnley fan, is this, but with success and with an amazing manager and players like that, you always, as a Burnley fan, have that horrible sinking feeling that they're not going to be around for very long. And there is a few players in our squad where you just think, and the manager where you just think, oh, we are not going to have them for long. This is a short-term happiness.
Yeah, we kept hold of Dyche for so long because he wasn't trendy. But yeah, the players that we've got now are sort of very modern. You can see other clubs being interested. I think, though, probably one of the reasons that we eventually got relegated was because we didn't make enough use of bringing these players through. You know, we got Keane for a couple of mil, sold him for 25. Tarkowski we got for 3 mil. We could have got, you know, 20, 30 mil for MXP. He left on a free. You know, I think a good model for a club like ours, and it seems to be the model that they're adapting, is to buy younger players, make them better, and sell them on. And realistically, without Premier League, and, you know, ideally we'd be in the Premier League every year, which was obviously the model they were taking before. But it's not realistic necessarily for a club like Burnley to be in the Prem every year. So it's a good model to have, you know, what, pay 3.5 mil for Zorori.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, isn't it? You wouldn't be surprised if we got getting on for 10 times that when he left.
Yeah.
And so just that, it's a good model. And, you know, in the meantime, we get to watch him play brilliant football. It's exciting. You know, Vincent Kompany, I'm sure, didn't come to Burnley to be Burnley manager for the rest of his career.
No.
But if he gets a better job, then it will be because he's got us promoted. And
we're in better shape.
Yeah, we look like, you know, a more appealing prospect for a manager of that kind of, you know, this kind of modern, fresh, you know, young, you know, it's a club now that in some ways, you know, you perhaps want to take over rather than a club who's on the slump in the Premier League. It's a club that, you know, if we go up, say Kompany keeps us up and then he leaves, you know, we get someone of a similar profile, we're buying players of a similar profile.
Yeah, definitely.
A good model. So, you know, if we do lose people, Celavi, that's the reality of being a club like Burnley. You look at Brighton, the amount of people they've lost recently to Chelsea.
Yeah,
but
true.
That's just how it is, isn't it? And
I feel less concerned by that than I did when we were on the worry about losing Dyche, because we didn't know whether we were a one-trick pony, whether that was our one chance. The fact that Alan Pearce was able to bring in Kompany and attract these players, like, the next move will feel different because, well, we've done it already. We've lost a really key manager, one that brought us a lot of success in a different way, and we were able to move on. I always said for a long time that we were a club that in desperate need of a rebrand, and I feel like we've brought that. There's a freshness about the club from the board all the way down. We're attracting players. We're playing entertaining football. The fans have got a spring in the step again. We're far superior to them lot down the road. And as a business going forward, we're much more, Burnley in 2023 is much more attractive than the one 10 years ago. And I'm really excited to see where we go. Okay, it's very difficult because I don't want this podcast to come to an end because I'm already sat there going like, oh, what do we talk about next? We've talked about everything and I kind of want to start it all again and start again from the beginning because I just want to relive this a long time. But it is finished now. And of course, the Clarets have finished for the World Cup break. And with the exception of Conor Roberts going away with Wales, and now we're here this morning, Anas Zorori has been called up to the Moroccan side, which is hugely exciting for him. 99% of the squad will stay together. We've got an opportunity to get some key injuries back. And we also have the opportunity to build on what we've done in the first kind of half of the season. Which has got us top of the table. Now, George, if you are Vincent Kompany right now, what are you looking at in this winter break?
A nice pint and a nice few pints, you know, reward yourself for some brilliant work. But that being said, on that sort of line, I think the players are all being given some time off to start with. Funnily enough, it did just bring, thinking about that, brought to mind that last night I did see on Zorori's Instagram that he was in Dubai last night. Now, at the time, I was thinking, oh, you know, he started his holiday early. But now I'm thinking, maybe did he get a call from the Moroccan guys you know, in the last couple of days, and then he's sort of stopping off at Dubai on the way to Qatar. It's quite handy, isn't it? But yeah, when that news broke this morning, I was
conspiracy of the week.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm absolutely delighted. It's we can't take it for granted, you know, seeing Burnley players in the World Cup. It's so exciting to see how he plays against these clubs. I mean, I've already been online looking for my Moroccan away shirt with Zerori on the back. Now, unfortunately, it's hard to get them, but I am trying. Shocking. So yeah, the World Cup, it will be fantastic to watch. But in terms of us, you know, Burnley, I think, yeah, a nice period of rest. And I think company's more thinking, well, I think he can just pat himself on the back. At the start of the season, he said in his like welcome interview, we need to be in and around the playoffs by the winter break. We have unbelievably exceeded that, and it still feels like there's so much more room for growth in this team. So it doesn't feel like we're stopping here. So I fully expect us to kick on the second half of the season. And I think what's promising is you've seen how much the side has improved over the last 3 months. You know, from the games that Tom was talking about of struggling to beat the you know, the Hull and Stoke and whatever them games were where we just couldn't score. You don't see that these days. We score against teams. We score plenty of goals against teams. I don't go into games thinking, oh, are we going to draw this one again? There's been so much growth in the team, not only on the attacking side, but defensively as well. We were going through that period where we were conceding so many goals to draw 1-1. That's just completely in our rearview mirror at the moment. So I think just the more time they spend together working with company system, it seems like second nature to many of them already. And, you know, you add into the mix, dare I say it, the likes of Scott Twine after the winter break and Westwood, who can play a really important role for when Cork or Cullen, you know, need a rest or they're suspended or whatnot. So, yeah, there's a lot of room for potential here. And then that's not even to mention the January transfer window. Adding a little bit of spice in there. So, yeah, there's plenty of promise, plenty of things to look forward to. And I'm just buzzing to see Zerori and Roberts in the World Cup, and not to forget Trippier and Pope as well.
And Weghorst, he's still our player, you know, don't forget.
Yeah, and I'm in camp, fully in camp, recall him.
He left because we got relegated. He didn't want to play in that. You're not just disappearing because you don't want to graft in the Championship. I'm not having this, George Poole. No.
He left because Van Gaal said you need to play at a higher level to get into the World Cup squad. And look what it's paid off. So.
Not having it. I would sell him. He's
well
gone.
Played, Weghorst. Well played.
He's gone. Hilariously, Daddy Bromley, who does come out with some absolute pearlers, most of them I can't with all good conscience share, just because it's terrible. He did not take the news of Zerori getting called up well today. And I think you can probably imagine what he said. And I think imagine Popper Poole's probably very similar. He said to me, great, he's been called up to the World Cup. He's either going to get injured or he's going to be that good and tear the World Cup apart that we're going to sell him immediately when he gets back, or he's going to do a corny and come back and be rubbish. Listeners, I didn't have a response. I just didn't have a response. I just went, well, let's just see, Dad. Let's just enjoy it. Let's just enjoy it. Let's just finish off then very quickly with that World Cup break, Tom. George has lined us up nicely for that. We do have players on the sideline who are waiting to get fit and come back, Westwood and Scott Twine being the obvious two. Are there any tweaks that you want to see? Do you want those players to come in? How do you adapt this side, or do you just leave it as it is? I think for me, and I'll set this on you to see, I think Teller's great, but I think he's been a bit in and out for me recently. So I'd be happy to give Scott Twine a place when he comes in. But other than that, it kind of feels like this team is playing itself at the moment, and I'd be worried if I were these injured players trying to get in.
I think it's a season where we're having to cram a lot of games in. We've been playing Saturday, Tuesday. There was a lot of talk about how they all look knackered against Sheffield United. So they're all going to have a part. Westwood, you know, we've had Cork suspended, rested at Sunderland. Westwood would come in then. I think there's obvious positions where all of the players that are out would go. So Twine could do the Brownhill job, or like you say, the Teller job. Chirlinoff, you've got as a replacement for either Benson or Zerori. And like you say, Westwood can play that core Cullen role. So the squad's been built with them in mind, I think it's fair to say. I think we're all looking forward to seeing seeing Twine at all. Chirlinoff looks...
Does he exist?
It'd be nice to see him. I think Chirlinoff, when he came
I forgot about him.
Three, didn't he? Of like Benson, Zorori and Chirlinoff. I thought I was most impressed with Chirlinoff in the first year.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see. I mean, if he's anywhere near them, their two level when he gets going, then that would just be scary, won't it? Imagine having them to bring on. And that's the other point I was going to make as well. As you said, Teller, he's a bit in and out at the minute. He looked a lot better, I thought, coming off the bench. And we said the same about Benson. As we've said, tired legs, when they come on, it makes a difference. So imagine being, the manager of, let's say, you're John Dale Thomason. It's at Ewood Park in March. You know, there's an hour gone. Your plucky band of youth team rejects and third division chances are clinging on 0-0. They're putting the bodies on the line. Darko Chirlinoff and Anas Zorori are being subbed off. Oh, thank God. But wait, here come Manuel Benson and Nathan Teller. Imagine how his face would drop as we rattle another three goals in at the Darwin end. So, yeah, it's amazing. If we've got all them players fit and firing, it really is exciting. And like George said earlier, we might not have even seen the best of what the squad's got to offer. And if that's the case, then it's going to be a really enjoyable second half of the season.
Well, I do not think we can go anywhere after that. I think that is the perfect ending to the Burnley or Superior Lancashire is Claret and Blue podcast special. Before I do go, I've just had a message while I've been on air from producer Matt telling me that I need to tell you all about our Burnley Book special podcast. It's coming in the next couple of weeks over the World Cup break. Burnley fans, listen out for a Burnley Book special podcast coming in the World Cup. Details to follow. My thanks as ever go to everybody who has contributed to this week's podcast. It has been a pleasure bringing you I think we held it together as well. I don't think we were too smug. Maybe we were a little bit smug, but you know what? It's been a long, long, long time since we asserted such a dominant performance over them lot and really showed them up to be the side that we've always known that they are. So listeners, spend the entire World Cup enjoying that, because them lot down the road have got a World Cup break where they're just feeling miserable and it feels kind of nice. We will be back after the World Cup break. We might nip in and out, depending on how our players do in the World Cup. We might come and speak to you. If there's any news coming out of Turf Moor, we might jump on and have a little bit of chat with you. So keep an eye on socials. We'll let you know. But otherwise, enjoy the first ever winter break. Let's see how this one goes and see how it fares for future World Cups. I have been Natalie Bromley. This has been the Known and Never podcast. Until next time. The Known and Ever podcast is brought to you in association with the TalkSport Fan Network. Natalie Bromley is the host and editor, and the show is produced by Matt Moss. Our resident statistician is Dave Roberts, and our FPL expert is Adam Dennett. The analysis show team is collectively Tom Whittaker, Richard Steele, George Poole, Charlotte Rigby, Adam Dennett, and Robbie Kopak. Our music is provided by George Gaskill, and our newsletter team is headed up by Jamie Smith. If you don't already, you can subscribe to our newsletter by visiting nonadnever.substack.com. Our thanks as ever go to our partners, TalkSport. We are, as ever, proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.